Good Erev Shabbos, everyone. Welcome back to our 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes. I want to thank the Elef family for sponsoring tonight in memory of Dr. Elef's father-in-law, Yechiel Meir Ben Zev. Our learning should be an aliyah for his neshama. And as always, our learning should also be an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Dila Bask of Real Pinchas. Everyone should enjoy the cholent and the meat of the cholent. I want to welcome Rabbi Framowitz, my dear chaver, friend, Yedi, I don't know what I call you. My dear friend from Cleveland now, it's a great schuss to have you here, and of course to welcome my older brother as well for the shir as well. Okay, we have 3 ideas in 30 minutes, and some of them might be some of my favorite ideas. So you guys are in for a treat, and it's like children, you can't pick the favorite one, but I do have a favorite, but I just won't say it. So here we go. Okay, the first idea is from Rav Kluger. Rav Zvi Kluger, this is from his Sefer on Pesach. It's an extraordinary idea. The Pasuk says, right at the beginning of the parsha, Amar Paro Levnei Yisrael, Nevuchim Heim Ba'aretz, Sagar Alehem Bamidbar. Paro says the Jewish people are wandering, therefore we should close it off. Paro basically has regret. He regrets having sent the Jewish people off, and he says we should get them back. Now, if you look at the Pasuk says, Ve'amar Paro Levnei Yisrael, which literally translates as, Paro says, to the Jewish people. What's the problem with that? Where are the Jewish people right now? The Jewish people are long gone by now. So how is Paro speaking to the Jewish people? So Rashi over there says it's not Livnei Yisrael, but rather it's Al Bnei Yisrael. He's not speaking to the Jewish people. He's speaking about the Jewish people. And that's how Rashi gets out of the problem of who Paro was speaking about. However, if you look in the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, which is my second underline on page number one, Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel says, Vayamar Paro Lidasan Vilaviram Bnei Yisrael. That it wasn't that Paro was speaking about the Jewish people, but rather Paro was actually speaking to members of the Jewish people. Who was that? That was none other than Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram apparently stayed back, according to the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel. It means that the rest of the Jewish people left. Some people died in the Shloshes Yemei Afela, in the 3 days of darkness, and somehow Dasan ve'aviram did not die, and they did not go either. Now, there's a few things that are extraordinary about this. Number one is, why didn't they die in the 3 days of darkness? Right? We know that all the wicked people died, and we know that Dasan and Aviram were the wicked people. They were the ones that when Moshe came out and he saw a Jew hitting a Jew, it was Dasan and Aviram. So how is it that they didn't die in the Shloshes Yemei Afela? Second of all, one of the problems with this, Rav Kluger points out, is that we know that Dasan and Aviram get out of Mitzrayim. We know that both because the Pasuk by the Mon later on in the Parsha tells us that, according to Rashi, and we know from the story of Korach that Dasan and Aviram appear later on in Sefer Bamidbar as well. So if you're going to tell me that Dasan and Aviram stayed back in Mitzrayim, how is it that they also were in the Midbar? Something doesn't add up. So if you look in the left-hand side of page number one, Rav Kluger quotes the Medrash. Medrash says, "Va'amar Paro Levnei Yisrael, Adasan ve'alaviram, shenisharu b'mitzrayim, that Dasan Aviram stayed back in Mitzrayim. V'achar kach, and afterwards, kishero haya nifka Levnei Yisrael, and afterwards, when they saw that the sea split for the Jewish people, miyad to b'libam v'nisarvu imacheim b'nei Yisrael." You know, there's that vision of like that guy running for the train. You know, like you had a month, you had a week, you had all day, and then like the train is leaving at 12 o'clock, and there's always that one guy who's like running down the platform as the train is pulling away. That was Dasan Aviram, says the Medrash. That Dasan Aviram originally said, you know what, it's good in Egypt. And then all of a sudden, they see that Hashem split the sea, and they're hedging their bets. They're like, whoa, I don't want to be with this Paro guy, I'd rather be with the Jews. And so they start chasing after the Jewish people. And that explains the Medrash, is how you get to the fact that both Paro was able to speak to Dasan ve'aviram, and how they end up later on in the desert with the rest of the Jewish people. It's that they eventually crossed the sea, they just did it a little bit later than everybody else. That is all of the buildup. Another answer to this is in the Be'er Mayim Chaim, where he writes the following, Uvenei Yisrael ha'chu b'yabasha b'sochayam. That's the pasuk at the end of Kriyas Yamsuf. And over there, you'll notice that the Jewish people have already crossed the Yamsuf, and then the Pasuk comes back and says that the Jewish people were crossing the Yamsuf. But they already crossed the Yamsut. They already crossed the sea. So how are they crossing the sea again? Says the Be'er Mayim Chaim, Miat Rabim Shnayim, Lomer Kiel Shnayim Yisrael Levad Nikra Yam. Says the Be'er Mayim Chaim that the Yamsut actually split a second time. Who did it split for? None other than Dasan and Avira. Now this is all extraordinary. Because if you think of like the evil paradigms in the Torah, we have very few antagonists like Dasan Aviram. They are almost like the paradigmatic evil people in the Torah. And if you take any of these sources at face value, the whole thing is striking. Here are the two most wicked people in the Torah. Not only do they not perish during the 3 days of darkness, but according to the Be'er Mayim Chaim, Hashem splits the sea a second time for two people. It means he created one miracle for a couple million people, and then he comes back and does another miracle for two people. You don't think that's extraordinary? The two worst people in the Torah, and Hashem is splitting the sea for them once again. Listen to what Rav Kluger says. Turn your page to page number 2. Kluger quotes the Rush. The Rush in his commentary on the Torah asks this question. And he says, Yesh Lishol, in the underline that I have on page number 2. You have to ask the question. Mashakasu Shemesu Kol Rishayim Besoch Shlosh Simei Afela Ve'adasan Ve'avirim Lo Mesu. How can you say that all the wicked people perished in the 3 days of darkness, but not Dasan Aviram? Shahi Rishayim Gemurim. They were the most wicked of all wicked people. Says the Rush, something unbelievable. Yeshlomar afa pisha Yerushaim, even though they were wicked, lo nisyashu minagula. They never gave up hope in the redemption. They never gave up hope in the gula. Lo nisyashu. They never had yeyush. They never gave up on Hashem redeeming the Jewish people. Now, how do you understand that? That is amazing. That means that here you have two of the most wicked people in the Torah, paradigms of evil and of wickedness. The two people where if I told you that 4/5 of the Jewish people died, you would have assumed Dasan and Aviram, and yet they get out. Says the Rush, why did they get out? Because they never gave up hope. And because they never gave up hope, Hashem gives them another chance. Because they never gave up hope, Hashem gives them another chance. It means that they blew opportunity number one. Hashem performed the miracles. Hashem killed all the firstborn sons. He said, we're going out of Mitzrayim. And everybody left, and Dasan Ve'avirim didn't leave. They missed the opportunity. And then they came at the last second, at the 11th hour, and they say, we want to go also. We realize our mistake. And what does Hashem do? Hashem splits the sea for them again. Why? Because lo nisyashu min ha'geula. They never gave up on Hashem redeeming the Jewish people. And it means that even though they're going to be wicked again throughout the Torah, they're going to be with Korach ve'Adasso. Hashem splits the sea with them again. And what you see from here, I think, is something extraordinary. You see, sometimes we give up very easily. We give up on ourselves. We give up on relationships. We give up on Hashem. Dasan ve'aviram. The only thing that they had to hold on to was lo nisyashu min ha'geula. They did not give up. And that alone made them not just worthy of redemption, but that made them worthy of Hashem splitting the sea a second time. It means that when you believe enough, Hashem is willing to split the sea for you a second time. It means that there are such things as do-overs in Judaism. Dasan ve'avirim missed the first train. And Hashem comes back and says, I'll give you another chance, I'll give you another opportunity. Why? Because, says the Rush, lo nisyashu min ha'geula, because they didn't give up on the geula. And therefore, if you continue on, in Rav Kluger, he says, V'inei kashir lom dimes divrei Rush. When you learn this comment to the Rush, B'lishem evinim v'yiduim es matzavam imiti shobanei shob mitraim, mitztayir b'moach adam. It blows your mind that B'nai Yisrael were such tzaddikim. And after that, two people stayed back. V'im kozeh lo nisharnu osam shnei rishayim me'achar shlo yisayi shemin ha'gula. But they never gave up. And they never gave up on the gula. But therefore he goes on and he explains that's the greatness of Dasan ve'Aviram. That's why Hashem saved them. That's why they didn't perish in the 3 days of Gula. It is a startling comment by the Rush. It's almost mind-boggling because it makes no sense. It's almost irrational that Dasan ve'Aviram were so wicked and the only thing they had was lo nisyashu min ha'geula. They didn't give up on the Gula. And as a result of that, Hashem made them worthy of redemption. We as a Jewish people, I think, have endured this. We as a Jewish people have endured 2,000 years of exile. And the one thing that's kept us going is this nekuda, this midah of lo nisyashu min agula. That so long as we don't give up on the prospect of redemption, there is life to the Jewish people. The moment we give up on it, then it's finished. The secret sauce of the Jewish people throughout history is this quality of lo nisyashu min agula. We never gave up on the fact that Hashem has redeemed us in the past, and Hashem will redeem us from the future. It is a startling comment from the Rush, quoted by Rav Kluger on a Sefer on Pesach, and I hope you found that meaningful as well. Okay, that is idea number one. Hello, there are more. Idea number two comes from Rav Yitzchak Et Shalom, who I don't believe we've ever quoted in this shir yet. Rav Et Shalom points out that if you go to the parashios that we're reading now, there is a chiastic structure, right? A, B, C, D, E, D, C, B, A. That's a chiastic structure. And he points out that there's a beautiful symmetry to all of the stories that the Torah is going to introduce us to. So if you go on page number 3 of your source sheets, where I have my star, I give the stories. So you go from Kiddush Bechoros to the commemoration of Yetzias Mitzrayim, to the events of the Yam Suf, to the waters of Marah, to the Man, to the waters of Chorev, to Amalek, to Yisro instructing the people, and then eventually to Vayisem Li, the attempt to Yuli Am Kadosh, that we're going to be a holy nation. Okay? So there's a symmetry to it. It starts with Kadesh Li and ends with Vayisem Li Kadoshim, that we're going to be holy. It continues with remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is instructing children. And then the B on the other end is instructing the people, where Yisro appoints judges. Then you go to the war against Egypt at the sea, that's number C, and you have Amalek, the war against Amalek. You have waters of Marah, you have waters of Chorev. You have the Man, and obviously the Man is the epicenter. Now, whenever you have a symmetry like this, you always look at the middle of, like the epicenter of that, and the epicenter, of course, is the Man. So what does Rav Yitzchak Et Shalom do with this? What is his message? So first of all, he says that if you notice, all of the A, B, C, D is on a very specific individualized level. And all of the D, C, B, A is on much more of a national level. So for example, I'll take the most obvious example. Kiddush Bechoros. Bechoros, of course, is a one-time act, and it's very limited. It's happening in the purview of a specific family. When you come to the Jewish people at Har Sinai, it's obviously much more expansive. It is a constant obligation that we have to be the people of God. And it doesn't just apply to the Bechorim, it applies to every member of the Jewish people. Let's go to the bees. Another example. Here you have the mitzvah to commemorate Yetzias Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, the bee there is referring again within the context of a specific family, right? Vigadat Levincha is a very specific case. And it is a one-time event. We have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. When you go to what I'll call B prime, that's Yisro, that's the judges, that is on a much more expansive national level, and it's an ongoing process. It doesn't just happen once. So everything essentially, says Rav Yitzchak Et Shalom, is taking you from the mindset of an individual to the mindset of community. It's taking you from the mindset of me as a person to what it means to be something bigger than me, which is now a part of a people. And every part of the chiastic structure set up that the flip side of all of it is on a national level, whereas the first set was on a very specific individual level. As I referenced, whenever you see that A, B, C, D, E, D, C, B, A, the E is the epicenter. The E is the most important part. And that is the Man that we're going to read about in the Parsha. Why is the Man the most important story in all of Sefer Bo, Bishalach, Yisro? Why is the Man the epicenter of that, I'll call it the fulcrum, of where we turn ourselves from being individuals to being a part of the people? In fact, if I quizzed you and said, at what point do we go from being individuals to a people, you probably wouldn't have said the Man. You may have said Kriyas Yamsuf, you may have said Kabbalah Satorah, but you probably wouldn't have said the Man. Why is it that the Man is that transformational point? It's that where we switch and transition ourselves from being individuals to now being a part of the community. So turn to page number 4 for the comment of Rav Yechalon. He quotes Rav Yaakov Maidan, who says the following. Rav Yaakov Maidan, in a wonderful article, points out that the command for each person to restrict himself to a daily portion for each member of his household represented not only a good deal of faith in God, but also a tremendous self-restraint in concern for a fellow human being. Right? What was one of the halachos of the man? One of the halachos of the man was that you can only take exactly what you needed for your household, but you couldn't take any more. Now, what happened if I went outside? Let's say tomorrow's Friday, okay, and I'm hungry. I've been exercising a lot, I've been dieting a lot, and I'm starving. So I go out and I say, you know what, usually I get 5 loaves of bread, but I'm really hungry. And so tomorrow, I'm going to carb up, I'm going to get 7 loaves of bread instead of my usual 5. Where do those 2 loaves of bread come from, says Rav Yaakov Maidan? Those 2 loaves come from someone else in the Jewish people. So when I choose to take more, it doesn't just impact me, but it's a recognition that it also impacts somebody else. And therefore, says Rav Yaakov Maidan, the man is the first time a Jew realized that my decisions don't just impact me, but that they impact the person around me also. And so I can go out tomorrow morning, and instead of taking 5 loaves of bread, I could take 7 loaves of bread. But you know what that's going to mean? That's going to mean that Jason Asher, poor Jason Asher, is going to have only 3 loaves of bread instead of his 5 loaves of bread, and he's going to go hungry. And he's going to have a salami sandwich, right? Exactly. So what I recognize is that the decisions that I make in the way I behave, in the way I choose to conduct my life, doesn't just impact me, but I have a responsibility for the world around me as well. He writes, this is how he explains the test of the man, that we are tested to see how much concern each of us could demonstrate for our fellow, knowing that if we took more than our portion, someone else would go hungry. Indeed, the Bnei Israel passed the test with flying colors. For a slave people wandering in a desert to exercise this much self-restraint was a demonstration of their readiness to stand as a unified nation and to enter into a covenant which includes mutual responsibility. For people who came out of Mitzrayim, who were starving, to all of a sudden receive the man, and yet at the exact moment they got the man, to also be told that you can have, but you can't have too much. And if you have too much, it's going to impact one of your neighbors. And therefore, you have to exhibit self-control. That is a very hard thing to do. That is a very hard thing to go home and try this with your children and grandchildren. Okay, go to the store and get 10 M&Ms. And tell them each you're going to divide the M&Ms carefully and equally between all of your children and grandchildren. And then, let me know how that goes when Johnny takes an extra M&M and Sally, who had her M&M taken away from her, starts beating up Johnny, which Johnny then beats back, and almost World War III breaks out in your house, right? Now, tell your children, no, just maintain self-control. If each of you take only the same exact number of M&Ms, life's going to be good. It's hard. Kids like M&Ms. They like candy. They don't have self-control, right? Think about the image of someone coming out of a ravenous situation where they've been starved, and they're gobbling food down. And to ask that person to exhibit self-control is almost impossible. That's what the Jewish people are being asked to do here. Now, how are they able to do it? This is what he says is the ultimate demonstration of mutual responsibility. It's my recognition that the way I behave doesn't just impact me, but that it impacts you also. And that if I take too much, it means you're going to have too little. And that's how I develop and sensitize myself to the sense of mutual responsibility. And that's how Rav Shalom says, the entire Torah switches from a Torah that's focused on Jews as individuals to a Torah that's focused on Jews as a nation. That I go from instructing my family to instructing a nation. That I go from caring just about myself to caring about the nation as a whole. And that transition, that transformation takes place at the man, because it's the man where we taught ourselves that. It's the man where we flex those muscles of not personal responsibility, but a mutual responsibility and of caring for the nation as a whole as well. And so idea number 1 came from a Kluger, a wild idea about Dasan ve'Avira. How is it that they were able to get out? What does that mean? Hashem split the sea for them again. This amazing comment by the Rosh, Lo nizyashu min ha-geula, that the one thing that they had for them was that they never gave up on Hashem redeeming them. And therefore, even though they were terrible, wicked, horrific people, but the fact that they always kept a belief that Hashem was going to redeem the Jewish people, that alone was not just enough for them being redeemed, but Hashem split the sea for them a second time. Because Hashem says, if you maintain your belief in me, I'll always give you that second chance, I'll always give you that second opportunity. Idea number two came from Yitzhak at Shalom about the role of the man. How is it that the man was that transformative moment in Jewish history? It's because it's at that moment that I was forced not just to think about myself, but I was forced to think about the Jewish people as a whole. And that's what it means to be a Jew. Not just to think about myself, but to think about our people.
Yeah. Seems not to say
yeah.
Not a zero sum game.
Yeah. He makes it sound like it's a zero sum game. Yeah. Yeah.
So wasn't that point that Dustin and Avira last week, since they were considered dead since they lost all their money?
No, but they were still here.
Still alive,
yeah. We know they're alive because they make an appearance in Korach. Yeah. They were part of Korach Ve'Adasa, so we know that they alive. Okay, the last idea is wild as well. Comes from Rav Schwab and his main base of Shoeva, page number 5. And Schwab makes the following comment on one of the strangest, hardest to understand midrashim in the entire Torah. Pasuk says, "Vayasav elokim es ha'am derech ha'midbar yam suf v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim." The Jewish people left chamushim. Rashi says chamushim first means that they were armed, and then Rashi says, "No, that echad mechamesha yatsu, that only 1/5 left, but 4/5, 80% of the Jewish people died in the 3 days of darkness." That alone you could sit on for a week just trying to grapple with what exactly that must have felt like. For 80% of the Jewish people to have passed away in the 3 days of darkness, it's almost mind-boggling. But if you say, look in the Mechilta that Rashi quotes, Mechilta doesn't just say Echad Mechamisha, 1/5. V'yesh Omrim Echad Mechamishim. Some say it's 1/50. V'yesh Omrim Echad Mechamesh Meo, 1 in 500. Which is more, 1 in 5 or 1 in 500? 1 in 500 is more. Thank you. Okay? Therefore, he says, I have two actuaries here. I don't know who to go to. Okay? Therefore, says Rav Schwab, Ubevadai shedavar zeh tamua maod. He says, I understand. Shelefi divrayim nimsa shemesu karv l'shloshim million o shlosh meo million b'nei Yisrael kodem agula. According to the other opinions in the Mechilta, it means that upwards of 30 million or 300 million Jews died in the 3 days of darkness. What does that mean? That obviously can't be the case, right? That it can't physically be that 300 million Jews died in the 3 days of darkness. How do you understand that? How do you understand that Mechilta? Never bother you? I mean, the original Rashi is bothersome enough, that 1/5. Now you're up to 300 million, according to the Mechilta. How do you understand that?
But it explains Paro's complaint about the many.
That we were so many. 300 million is a lot. But that would really blow the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim out of the water. Right, that would like really paint in a new light. Says Rav Schwab the following. Rav Schwab says, based on the Rashi in Brachos, the second paragraph, he says, the pasuk says, Kol d'mei achicha tzoakim alai min adama, that after Cain kills Hevel, Hashem says that the blood of the blood of your brother is screaming out from the land. And d'mei achicha is plural. Says Rashi, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, damo v'dam zarosav. See, Hashem tells Cain that you didn't just kill Hevel, your brother, but you know who else you killed? You killed Hevel's children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, you killed, by killing Hevel, you actually killed generations and generations and generations of people that would have come out of Hevel. And so if we were creating a family chart of Hevel's family, as it went down the generations, how many people did Cain actually kill?
Half the world.
Millions and millions and millions of people, says Rashi. Based on that, says Rav Schwab, V'chein yesh lo mar Cain. That's how I understand it. Sheba emes lo mesu elo yichidim. 300 million people didn't die in the days of darkness. And not even 3 million people died He says, really, individuals died. That there were individuals that weren't worthy of redemption. And they died in the 3 days of darkness. But you know what happened because those people died? But had that people stayed alive, think about how many more people we would have had had they continued to live on through the generations. And so says Rav Schwab, every Jew is not just one person. Every Jew represents generations and generations and generations of Jews to come. And that's what the Medrash is disagreeing about. In other words, the only machlokas is how many generations are we going down the line? Is it up until we get to 4/5? Is it till 1/50? Is it to 1/500? But the nekudas hamachlokas, what they're arguing about is the same thing, which is they're all recognizing that every single person who died in the 3 days of darkness wasn't just one person, rather he was many generations to come. He says, "Ve'ochacha brura l'dvareinu humimasha perish Rashi shemesu b'shlosh shemei afela." He says the proof of this is that Rashi says they all died in 3 days. V'lama lo mesu b'zman acher? Why did they die another time? Ela shelo ratzu haKadosh Baruch Hu shehamitzrim yargishu shemesu b'nei Israel. Hashem didn't want the Egyptians to see the Jews dying. That would be a desecration of the Jews. Let me ask you a question. If 300 million Jews died, you don't think the Egyptians would have noticed? Of course they would have noticed. Says Rav Schwab, that's the point. It wasn't 300 million. It was a few individuals. It was a few wicked people. So why does the Torah then call it so many people? Because each individual doesn't live in an island unto himself. Each individual represents generations and generations and generations to come. And so when we're talking about rescuing hostages now, or making deals for hostages now, it's not just one person. It's that person, please God, gets married and has children. And those children have children. Those children have great. And then all of a sudden, in 100, 200, 300 years from now, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of people that were saved because you saved one person. That's what the Gemara means when it says that anyone who saves one life, it's as if he saves an entire world. Because exactly the case of Hevel. Every single one of us is not just one person. Every single one of us is generations and generations to come. I remember when I was an NCSY Kollel, Rabbi Moshe Tarragon was talking to us, Rabbi Moshe Tarragon from Gush, son should have a continued refuah shlema, but he was talking to us about making Aliyah and the struggle of making Aliyah. And I remember he drew on the blackboard. In those days we had blackboards. Now you'd call it a whiteboard or a smartboard or whatever. Or he'd put it on his iPad and it would project itself on the whiteboard. But he put on the blackboard, he said, you know what, for me, making Aliyah was very, very difficult. He said, I'm in a perpetual Oleh, I'm an immigrant, I'll never speak the same, I'll always be a little bit of an outsider. And then he started drawing. He said, I have this many kids, and he put, you know, 4 lines. And then he said, each one of my kids is going to have. And literally on the blackboard, he went down 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 generations. And he said, I'm making the sacrifice, not for myself. I'm making the sacrifice so that in 9 generations there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Tarragons populating Israel, all because I made one decision, which was to move to Israel. And that image is etched in my mind, and I think that's exactly what Rav Schwab is saying. Rav Schwab is saying it on the negative side, which was that every Jew that was killed during the 3 days of darkness could have lived a life of prosperity and been generations into generations. But the flip side is a reminder to us of the influence that each one of us has. The influence that we have in the decisions that we make, not just to impact us, but to impact generations and generations and generations to come. Whether it's elevating our sense of religiousness in practice, whether it's making a life-changing decision to go to Israel, whatever it is. But the decisions we make don't just impact us, but they impact generations to come. And that's why it's referred to as chamushim. Not because, like we thought, that 4/5 died in Egypt. That would be an extraordinary number. No, but it's that many people, ki'ilu, like as if that many people died, because every person represents generations and generations and generations to come. First of all, I love this idea of Rav Schwab, because it totally turns so much difficulty on its head. And it really makes it a little bit more, less difficult to understand. But I love it also because there's such a mussar in here. There's such a message for every single one of us, which is a reminder that the decisions that we make don't just impact and don't just influence us, but influence generations and generations to come. We are not just one person. That if all of you look up right now and in like your mind's eye, you think of your family tree and of transitional points in that family tree and how much it impacts generations and generations to come, that is the extraordinary impact that every single one of us can have. That is Rav Schwab's unbelievable, unbelievable insight into this very difficult to understand idea of V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael, Me'aretz Mitzrayim. And so we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Beautiful idea from Rav Kluger in a Sefer on the Haggadah of Dasan Ve'aviram, Lo Nisyashu Min HaGeula. They never gave up hope in the redemption. We saw idea number two was from Rav, who did I say it was from? Rav Yitzchak Et Shalom. And the idea of the man, quoting Rav Yaakov Meidan, about the sense of mutual responsibility. That the transitional point in Jewish history is when we stopped looking at ourselves as individuals and started looking at ourselves as one unified nation. That happened in the Mun. At least his understanding is the Mun was a zero-sum game. And therefore, that's how I understood that my decisions impact you and your decisions impact me. And it makes us that much more unified. Idea number three comes from Rav Schwab. This unbelievable idea of Chamushim Alu B'nei Yisrael. That it wasn't that only one-fifth left and four-fifths died. It means that there were individuals that died. But because each person represented generations and generations lost, therefore it's as if the Jewish people lost so much. And the flip side is a recognition, a reminder of the impact that we have and of the decisions that we make in our lives, in the transitional moment, in our family tree, how much that's going to impact and influence for generations and generations to come. I wish everyone a good Shabbos.